Dear friends, in previous studies, we addressed the three angels' messages of chapter 14. But chapter 14 does not end with these three messages. We have seen that these three messages have an even greater impact in the future than in the past. They talk about things that are happening. And while they happen, God is here comforting His people with a message of encouragement. In fact, while the world is moving, clouds gradually accumulate, and gradually God's people is more and more frowned upon. Persecution is here. We have talked about it already. And this people is in great need of encouragement. So, that's what we'll be reading in chapter 14, verses 12 and 13. Revelation 14, 12, 13. Here is the patience of the saints. Here are those who keep the commandments of God and the faith of Jesus. Then, I heard a voice from heaven saying to me, "Write, blessed are the dead who die in the Lord from now on." This text is interesting because it shows us once again that the people of God is called to persevere. This perseverance is a real resilience in trial and difficulty. Hypomone in Greek, resilience in adversity. We have already seen this in chapter 12, verse 17. Just for remembrance, let's read it again. Revelation 12, 17. And the dragon was enraged with the woman, and he went to make war with the rest of her offspring who keep the commandments of God and have the testimony of Jesus Christ. Here, as in chapter 14, here lies the concept of keeping the commandments of God. It remains a pillar. The commandments of God are still relevant, and we have no reason to think that they have disappeared or will disappear. Jesus confirms it in the Gospel of Matthew chapter 5, verse 17. Matthew 5, 17 to 19. Do not think that I have come to destroy the law or the prophets. I did not come to destroy but to fulfill. For assuredly, I say to you, till heaven and earth pass away, one jot or one tittle will by no means pass from the law till all is fulfilled. Whoever therefore breaks one of the least of these commandments and teaches men so, shall be called least in the kingdom of heaven. But whosoever does and teaches them, he shall be called great in the kingdom of heaven. See the importance Jesus attributed to the law? In chapter 14, there are two things that characterize the saints. They keep the commandments of God and they have the faith of Jesus. The same verb to keep, tereo, in Greek applies both to the commandments of God and the faith of Jesus. And this suggests that the faith of Jesus as well as God's commandments are based on the same model. Therefore, faith of Jesus means faith Jesus had. To resist in hard days will require faith in Jesus, of course, but faith that Jesus had. It seems to me that this is what the text wants us to understand. Now, verse 13 is a beatitude, which means that it starts with the word blessed. Blessed are. And about God's children who are persecuted, God says that they are blessed. Blessed are even those who go to death. Let's read this passage once again. Revelation 14, verse 13. Then I heard a voice from heaven saying to me, Write, blessed are the dead who die in the Lord, for now on. Dying at that moment is a grace from God, for the trial will be so hard. Yet, their dying doesn't mean disqualification. It is not because they die that they are lost. No, on the contrary, their works will follow them. It is curious to think that their salvation is linked to their works. Yet, it is a recurring theme, and I invite you to read at the end of the book of Revelation, in chapter 22, verse 12, what Jesus himself tells his people. Revelation 22, verse 12. And behold, I am coming quickly, and my reward is with me, to give to everyone according to his work. Would we be saved by our works? Would we receive the mark of God, the seal of God on the hand? No. It is on the forehead. It is because the heart is changed, because the mind is changed, that the works follow. Therefore, do not think that salvation is by works. The fact is simply that the heart is touched, and the heart being captured, so consequently, works follow. I invite you to read the second part of this second beatitude. Revelation 14, 13. Yes, says the Spirit, that they may rest from their labors, and their works follow them. The fact of dying doesn't change anything. They are at rest. Do you remember what we read about those who receive the mark of the beast or worship the beast in his image? They have no rest day or night. One might think that rest is on their side, on the persecutor's side. Would it be the solution, the most enviable position rather than being persecuted? Definitely no. They have no rest day or night. And when we look at what happened at the court of Babylon, the three companions of Daniel were not afraid of the threat of King Nebuchadnezzar. They faced the situation with calm and confidence. The one who was really afraid was Nebuchadnezzar, when he saw the three young Hebrews accompanied by someone looking like the Son of God. Fear is not on the side of those who follow God. Fear, rather, is on the other side. Now, I would like to move on and see how practically these things will take place. What we have seen about the three angels' messages, messages addressed to the world in general, and especially this beatitude addressed to the people in particular. These things will take shape in an agricultural picture. The harvest and the wine harvest. Now we have come to the point of the harvest. And I invite you to read in chapter 14, verses 14 to 16, Revelation 14, 14 to 16. Then I looked, and behold, a white cloud. And on the cloud sat one like the Son of Man, having on his head a golden crown, and in his hand a sharp sickle. And another angel came out of the temple, crying with a loud voice to him who sat on the cloud, "Trust in your sickle and reap, for the time has come for you to reap, for the harvest of the earth is ripe." So he who sat on the cloud trust in his sickle on the earth, and the earth was reaped. Of course, the harvest evokes for us the end of the world. But I'd like to highlight something that precedes a little Jesus' return. In our text of Revelation, Jesus' return is found in chapter 19. We will see it soon. But what is happening here takes place a little earlier. And we'll see that through a comparison with the text in the book of Daniel, chapter 7. First of all, let's read verse 14 of Revelation 14. We shall go through two details. A white cloud and one like the Son of Man. These same images, these same symbols are found in the book of Daniel, chapter 7, verse 13. By the way, you will realize that very often we refer to the prophet Daniel. The whole chapter 7 is extremely interesting. We already quoted it for the understanding of the beast at the beginning of Revelation 13. Now in Daniel 7, from verse 9 onwards, starts a judgment. And verse 13 corresponds to the end of the judgment. Let's read Daniel 7:13. I was watching in the night visions, and behold, one, like the Son of Man, coming with the clouds of heaven. He came to the Ancient of Days, and they brought him near before him. We understand, through the expression, one like the Son of Man coming, that reference is made to Jesus himself. And it is not the Son of Man going to the earth, but going to his Father. Jesus approaches his Father to receive, says verse 14, dominion and glory and a kingdom, that all peoples, nations, and languages should serve him. His dominion is an everlasting dominion which shall not pass away, and his kingdom the one which shall not be destroyed. Before coming back to earth, Jesus will receive his kingdom. It is almost as if he has been fighting so far. His elected have been gathered in. This is the harvest. This is the harvest he is coming soon to reap. At that point of history, according to Daniel, Jesus receives his kingdom in heaven, which implies that the judgment is over. It cannot be otherwise. We need to know who is part of the kingdom. That is, who is part of the tares and who is part of the wheat. It is remarkable to see that the text of Daniel 7:13 gives us two indications, the cloud and the Son of Man who sits on the cloud. These pictures are repeated in chapter 14, verse 14 of Revelation. as a clear indication to say that the time period is the same. Then, still in Daniel chapter 7, verse 14, the reign and the kingdom are given to him. This reminds us of what we have already seen in Revelation chapter 11, verse 15. Then the seventh angel sounded, and there were loud voices in heaven saying, "The kingdoms of this world have become the kingdoms of our Lord and of his Christ, and he shall reign forever and ever." So, what I am pointing out is that, whether in Daniel 7 verses 13 and 14, in Revelation 11 verse 15 with the seventh trumpet, or in the chapter 14 verse 14, we are at the same time period. The judgment of God, that is, the judgment of his elect, has just ended, whereas the judgment of the others will be going on. Now that the judgment of the house of God is over, we are aware of those who are part of God's people. And as we know who is part of God's people, then this people is remitted unto Jesus. And shortly after, Jesus comes back to take them with him. We also know that the Son of Man is wearing a golden crown. What's the meaning of this golden crown? It is the symbol of victory, but a victory that comes through faith. The prophet Isaiah describes also the same thing when he speaks of the royal diadem. I invite you to read this text in Isaiah chapter 62, verses 3 and 4. "You shall also be a crown of glory in the hand of the Lord, and a royal diadem in the hand of your God. You shall no longer be termed forsaken, nor shall your land anymore be termed desolate. You shall be called Hephzibah, and your land Beulah. For the Lord delights in you, and your land shall be married." Thus, the golden crown that the Son of Man wears on his head is nothing else than his people. His people is then his victory. His victory. The people of God is garnered in. The notion of victory in the form of a crown is already used by the Apostle Paul in many of his letters, to the Philippians in particular. Let's read together what he says to the Philippians chapter 4, the first verse. "Therefore, my beloved and longed for brethren, my joy and crown, so stand fast in the Lord, beloved." Or to the Thessalonians chapter 2, verse 19-20. "For what is our hope or joy or crown of rejoicing? Is it not even you in the presence of our Lord Jesus Christ that is coming? For you are our glory and joy." Well then, the people of God is the crown, the glory and the joy of Jesus. This is a people who walks according to his heart. So, we can also conclude that this marks the end of Jesus' mission. May I remind you of a character we come across in chapter 6, verse 2, at the opening of the first seal of the scroll seal with the seven seals? A character riding a white horse going off on a mission? Let's look at it. Chapter 6, verse 2, Revelation 6, 2. "And I looked, and behold, a white horse. He who sat on it had a bow, and a crown was given to him, and he went out conquering and to conquer. As the winner, because he has already conquered at the cross, he has already won victory. But he's going on to overcome through the end. And that moment of total victory is now, at that very moment of chapter 14, verse 14, and his people is his victory. I'd like to address briefly verse 15. For the time has come for you to reap. Let's read it, Revelation 14, verse 15. And another angel came out of the temple, crying with a loud voice to him who sat on the cloud, "Trust in your sickle and reap, for the time has come for you to reap, for the harvest of the earth is ripe." Think of what it means. The harvest of the earth is ripe. God's people has matured, has grown up. Do you remember the evolution of the church I spoke to you about? Now the church is matured. And this maturity makes possible the time to reap. One might think that God has decided, cut or sliced, and he has decided that things would come to an end just like that. No. God waits for his people to mature, to come to this spiritual maturity, as Paul puts it, to the full stature of Christ. So, isn't it extraordinary that we, poor, miserable sinners, have been called by God to this individual growth, to this collective growth, to this growth that allows all the harvest ripe, each grain having reached maturity? Well, that's what God is calling us to experience. May God help us to have this extraordinary vision of a people who is so mature that he becomes glory and honor of his God.